we were moving so fast that we couldn't address some of the concessions. And that's where your mindset has to be strong, where you're like, no, we are on the right path, or no, we are on the wrong path and we need to shift. Hi everyone, welcome back to the Stay Hungry podcast. Today we're talking about mastering your inner thoughts, the mindset shifts for marketing success. Andy, it's been a while since we've done a mindset episode.
A long time,
Thought I'd get one in.
Yeah, I guess lots of mindset experts out there, apparently. I mean, it's a case of, it's upgrading your thinking, really, because it's nothing woo-woo. And I think that's always my concern about the word mindset. You just think about people with long hair and beards chanting in a forest. Maybe naked, maybe with symbols. Obviously, it could be dangerous.
Cold water therapy.
But, oh yeah, God have your cold water therapy. You're just a fucking loser if you're not up at 5 a.m. in your cold water whiskey barrel.
The backlash is coming, I think, on that.
Yeah, so I'm a James Smith on that. I'd rather shit in my hands and clap.
So. Lovely.
mindset. What's that about then, Joel? Why is it important to have the correct mindset?
In terms of this podcast, it's because it massively reflects on the results that you get. That's ultimately, those who think they can and those who think they can't are both right, or whatever the phrase is.
Henry Ford, was that?
It is Ford, yeah. Whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right, I think is something like that. And
life's battles don't always go to the stronger or faster man, but sooner or later, the man who wins is the one who thinks he can. My mum bought that for me and framed it when I was a kid. Obviously, man/woman, etc. But it's like that. You can't manifest fucking success, but having the right attitude and knowing the response. I mean, for me, a lot of it is responsibility. And because I would say that's probably a big challenge for us in terms of like when we decide who we can and can't help. Have they got the right mindset? Are they willing to take responsibility for what happens?
Because
a lot of people, they aren't. They'll take the plaudits when stuff goes right. When stuff doesn't go right, they're like, well, it's the fucking government. It's Brexit. It's this, it's that. And it's like,
and I think a successful business owner has to have an extreme level of self-responsibility and an almost insane amount of self-belief. And the reality is all business owners at points have an amount of self-belief bordering on arrogance and an amount of self-responsibility bordering on insanity, but also we all then have the polar opposite of that as well. And as with an entrepreneurial mindset, you tend to not have much of the middle. You tend to not be someone that's just quite happy with your lot and bumble along and like smell the flowers in the breeze. You're always like, shit, or this is amazing. And that's why we're doing this podcast, is that it's about kind of channeling your mindset and your behaviours to lean into the self-belief and self-responsibility without getting up your own arse, for want of a better phrase, and also without falling off a cliff on the other side of it.
How or can you indeed teach someone to take responsibility? Or is that something that is at some point in childhood? I was watching a training about this yesterday with the team, not specifically about responsibility, but about stuff that just happens as a kid and that's ingrained in you, and it becomes, when you reach adulthood, that's a part of who you are. So I know children, like teenagers, say, not talk about you two, Maddie, Holly, if you're listening, if they win at something, you know, running, tennis, whatever, it's down to them. There are other children I know who, it's my shit trainers. Oh, it's because it's cold. I don't like the cold. It's because of it. And it's like, well, why are you two different at a young age? It's not like you've been running a business for 20 years. It's like, surely that's got to happen. That's got to happen somewhere younger. And can you get someone out of that way of thinking?
I can go deep on this.
Well, go on.
Oh, okay.
I'm not getting the tissues, am I?
No, I don't think so. Okay. So, I don't mind sharing my story. I grew up in a house with a perceived amount of a lot of discipline. So my friends, other family members outside of our house would be like, oh, that's quite a strict household. Those kids are well behaved. And there was discipline and there was consequence and told to work hard, study hard, play hard. That was kind of... But both of my parents, and my dad in particular, because he had significant mental health issues, had very little control or responsibility over their emotions. So, and my mum more so because of a consequence of dealing with my dad, to just, you know, be open. But, so I grew up with an environment where I learned, I would say, to blame other things for my emotions. So it was always work or money or the government or weather, or, you know, these are not great examples, but there would be specific things that's like, oh, I'm really worried about that because of this and this and this. And I know that's rubbed off on me. I know I've learned that behavior. But I also learned the discipline at the same time. So
discipline out of fear or respect?
I learned discipline out of fear.
Which is Godfather or Goodfellas? One of the two, what would you rather have? And the answer was fear. Remember that?
Yeah.
Is it some gangster film?
Yeah.
If your enemies, you want them to fear you or respect you. And everyone thinks, oh, well, of course, I want respect. It's like, no, you want them to fear you. Respect, they might try and take an inch. If they fear you, they'll never fucking take the piss at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, my father was a scary bloke, and I remember the line, wait until your dad gets home, and thinking, fuck.
See, it was the opposite of my house. Wait till your father get home. When my mum saw my first tattoo, and it was like, you wait till your father gets home. And dad got home, and we just had tea.
But, yeah, and... But yeah, as an adult, as a grown up, I would say people who know me quite well would be like, fucking hell, he's a like fairly straight up guy, disciplined, does what he says he's going to do, takes responsibility for his actions, generally polite, blah, 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 blah. But it does impact you. So like, I've had some issues like recently with a car, and it's been stressing me out. And stressing me out more than it should, and then that impacts other areas of your life. But I do know how to control it. So the thing I said to myself was just be a fucking grown up.
But it's hard, isn't it? Because when it comes to responsibility, I think we're quite similar. And what really, really fucking winds us up is that when you're reliant on a third party that you have no control over, it's fucking, it's my responsibility for choosing that car, for choosing that insurance company, whatever. But when they fuck up, it's almost like...
Yeah, and this is where the self-belief and self-responsibility game gets really tricky. So at times, I think people would look at me and be like, there is someone with a level of self-belief I'll never have. Like, there's someone who would walk on a stage in front of thousands of people, not think twice. Get on a plane, fly across the world on his own, go exploring, not think twice about it. But at other times, I struggle to leave the house. And it's situations like that that can get you where you go, well, I chose to buy the car, so that was my responsibility. I chose that insurance company, so that's my responsibility. I chose that leasing company, so that's my responsibility. And therefore, this is all my fault. Or... you can go the other way and be like, fucking leasing company, fucking insurance company, fucking car company. The world's out to get me. I'm a victim. And there's nothing I can do about it. So this is shit. And I think I would always rather be the one who's to blame.
But in that case, what rankles the most is that you are missold. So
yeah.
You made
it's an injustice. Yeah.
You made the decision because you're fucking not doing your job. You said you do this and you fucking haven't. So I know I chose you, but these are the assurances you gave me. And that's because
I think that's where a lot of people's anxieties and derailments come from, is the injustice. And something you say a lot, and you say it to me sometimes when I don't want to hear it, but that sometimes it still needs to be said, control the controllables.
Yeah.
So like, if I'm like the example being, I'm sat there waiting for a lease car to be picked up yesterday. So I've taken a whole day out of the office to sit and wait. And I get a text at like 10 past three in the afternoon saying we're not coming. I could lose my shit. I wanted to. There's things I put on hold. You know, I might have to miss a staff leaving due. Like, there were things that really bothered me, amongst other things that we've got going on. Or I could channel that energy and go and smash some of the work I was doing, take responsibility for the things I can control, and try not to let it hamper my self-belief too much. Now, I'd like complete cards on the table. My journey from home to work today, thinking about it, now I've calmed down, was very diminishing of my self-belief. It's like, well, why did you get that car in the first place? You haven't really gained anything. It's only to get you from A to B. By now, you could have had the car you're currently in and paid it off. But, you know, all these like negative thoughts that... And that's what happens to business owners. They go like, why did I spend that $2,000 on that ad campaign? That was money I had in my pocket. And now all I've got to show for it is these 10 leads. And none of these 10 leads are any good. And my email campaign's not really working. It's only got a 12% open rate. And the staff can tell it's not great. And actually, when you start going down that path, it's not a good path to be on. You need it's the, right, so we only got 10 leads. What can I do about it? Well, I'm going to speak to every single one and see if they're any good. And the parameters for deciding if they're good is it an outright no, like a fuck off and die? Is it not right now, in which case we'll keep warming them up? Is it maybe, but I need a bit more convincing? Or is it a definite yes, and I'll mark all 10 of them? And that is a far more productive way of approaching a negative situation. So I think I've taught myself, like, to get back to the original point, having come from an environment where victim mentality was quite prevalent and you would really feel injustice all the time. Oh, the fucking government, the fucking police, the fucking MOT centre, the fucking guy that sold me that car. I just try and turn that off now. It does still hurt. I'm not going to fluff it up and say, like, everything's fine. But I just try and turn it off and get on with what I can get on with. And sometimes you can't, and sometimes you just need to take a day and go for a walk with a dog or have a cup of hot chocolate. But that mindset piece of, like, don't become a victim of your own situation, because you can still control some of the outcome. So why not make the best of a bad situation? And I think if, as a business owner, if you can do that, if you can turn something that's been challenging or difficult into a positive, you're creating something from nothing, which is the key to successful business.
Yeah. I mean, we'll speak to people and they'll, like, say about leads. I've got 100 leads and they're all shit. And this is a waste of time. They give up and I'll go off the next new shiny marketing object. Okay, what have you done those 100 leads? Well, like, Bob in the office has called them all once and left voicemails. What? That's fucking it. It's like, well, 50% of sales, allegedly, are made after the fifth follow-up. So if someone's stuck their hand up to say, I'm interested, potentially, in what you have to offer, fucking stay in touch with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's weird because, I mean, I struggle if I don't understand why someone would think that way. I need to stop and think, right, okay, why are they thinking like that? But usually my first port of call will be, have I not explained it? So it'll always come back to me. Have I not explained it properly to them how it works? Because a lead doesn't mean it's a perfect someone who's waving a checkbook. And a lot of people out there, they still think that's what a lead is. And to be honest, there's probably a few marketing ninjas out there who have told that's what a lead is.
The whole,
a lead is not a customer.
The whole top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel thing.
Most people know what that is.
So lost in translation, yeah. There's so many hacks out there that are saying, like, make sales now. And you might, especially the first time you run that hack, you might make 10 sales, but the next time you run it, you'll only make one, and you'll be like, yeah, well, what have I done wrong? And it's, well, you've exhausted your audience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so much of this podcast would be about that responsibility. And I mean, we had a member of staff work here, and the entire mood of the office was dictated by how she felt. And if she felt bad, it was always someone else's fault.
The mood hoover.
Even if it was something to do with her relationship, it was still someone or something else's fault. And it's like, fucking hell. And back then, I really didn't know how to articulate that. But over time, we got to talk and help. And I gave, or as you did, gave her quite a lot of time. But ultimately, it was wasted because she still wouldn't accept that responsibility, that the changes within her.
It's brutal, isn't it? Because, like, anxious people...
She was anxious.
...display their anxiety a lot by blaming others. And depressed people display their pain a lot by blaming themselves. And some people have both. And you're like... Mm. Yeah, there's only so much you can help someone. But if you're a business owner and you've got, like, these mental barriers or limiting beliefs... You've got to start putting structures in place so that you can do what you need to do. And that, you know, that's as blunt as it is, really. That it's like, how do you, when you start to go down that spiral of, I don't know, fucking hell, the print company's not delivered the brochures on time and we're at an expo tomorrow. Is it time to like burn it all down and start again? Or can you ring another print company who can pull you out of a hole? Yeah. Like, And I would say 7 out of 10 people do the whole burn it to the ground and leave it too late and can't get themselves out of the shit. And 3 out of 10 get on the phone and sort it out. And you want to be in the 3 out of 10.
I mean, I think rarely will business be perfect. You will never win, but rarely will you win 3-1, 3-0. It will always be 3-1. So it's like, okay, I've had one failure but 3 successes. And focusing on those successes, because some things won't work in marketing. Guess what? Some things won't fucking work. You know, get the right advice, do what you're supposed to. Chances are it will work. But if it doesn't, okay, what have I learnt not to do again, or what can I do differently? And it's on to the next thing. And you can only test and measure. Can we, like people say to us now? Oh, can you guarantee this ad campaign will work? Well, of course I fucking can't. I can guarantee it will work better if we do it rather than you. But no, there are no any marketing that guarantees something. Fucking hell, run a country.
That's interesting, isn't it? That whole move fast and break things as well, where like, would you rather win 2-0 and it be perfect? Or would you rather win 5-1 and it's not perfect but the result's better? And there's two camps. There's people that would rather a 2-0, the perfectionist, and there's people like, well, I'd rather the 5-1, it's a bigger score. And there's room for improvement. And to be honest, if you're not conceding, you're probably not pushing hard enough. Yeah. And you, if you're conceding a lot, you're probably pushing too hard or not pushing at all. So it's that fine balance. Like we had a year in business last year where the first sort of 7 months of the year were incredible, but we probably conceded quite a few goals as well. And in the last 5 months of the year, you kind of feel that pain. Like we were moving so fast that we couldn't address some of the concessions. Mm-hmm. And that's where your mindset has to be strong, where you're like, no, we are on the right path, or no, we are on the wrong path and we need to shift. And that's an interesting thing. Like when you're moving towards like a growth mindset, how do I take something that only exists in my own mind and make it a tangible thing that people can see? And then how do I turn that into something that employs several people, has a premises, like rhythmically acquires customers, doesn't lose too many customers and becomes like a profit making machine? There's a lot of work on your mindset in that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, my brother works in the public sector and as usual, always joking, he's a teacher, I'm a business owner. And even though it is tongue-in-cheek, he does think that, you know, I don't pay taxes as much as I should. And you print money. All I have to do is, like, send an email.
It doesn't help that you tell him he gets 20 years holiday a year.
But... Well, he does fucking teach you. and, yeah, I wouldn't do his job and he wouldn't do my job. The security for him of getting a sizable paycheck as well, but a paycheck every month. And believe me, I can understand that. That's what he wants. No way could he. And to be honest, most of my friends aren't employed, don't have their own business. They can't understand the fact that, well, so you could earn lots 1 month, but in a couple of months' time, you could earn next to nothing. And that's just fear, and almost like that lack of control. But as an employee, to be honest, you haven't got any control. As a teacher, you're probably okay. You probably have got a job for life, unless you're wrong. But for business owners, that risk, that fear, that uncertainty, it's just part of...
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's water off a duck's back now, but it comes with the territory. And if you're going into business, to be honest, I wish I'd had my eyes a bit opened before I launched. I probably would have done a few things differently. And I went into a bit naively, but luckily, one of the things I did right was get into a network of good people, which is obviously what part of the reason behind the academy is, to give people a good network and to help steer them on the right path.
Yeah, exactly. Thinking that like, if I knew what I know now when I was 18, my life would be very different now. But I can't do anything about that. So, like, but I can pass that information on in the academy or whatever. Like, this isn't financial advice, but for example, if I'd put £200 a month into the S&P 500 from 18 years old, which is like an ETF stock, a collection of companies in a stock that you can invest in, a lot of pensions and stuff put in it, I would be retired by 40 if I wanted to be. I'd have millions. No one told me that when I was 18. And I'm a sense, you know, before I had my own company, I never had like a really tip-top job, but I've always been sensible enough that putting 200 quid aside each month would have been possible. But nobody told me that was a thing. And still nobody's telling people that that's a thing. And we're seeing the same, you know, you could probably make the same argument about gold, and there'll be people out there that have done very well in crypto and various things. And it's that mindset as a business owner of whether it's an asset to feed you or an asset for the future, that's what you're building. You're building an asset. It's not a job. Sometimes you're not going to get paid the salary that like your teacher brother's going to get paid, or your, like in my case, phone engineer brother's going to get paid. But they're not going to be able to have the flexibility in their life that you've got. And then they're also not going to have anything to show for it at the end, something to pass on or sell or whatever. And like a lot of the sort of like the Warren Buffetts of this world are basically saying, like, you're all mad, you're all running around trying to create cash when what you should be doing is trying to build assets. So like, get your house paid off, build your business, invest in art, buy sensible company shares, collect watches, like whatever it might be. And because those things will pay you back in the long term, where like feeding into like consumer mindset where you're just like constantly in and out, in and out, in and out, isn't going to put you in a strong place for the tough times which will inevitably happen. And I think like in terms of like getting clear on overcoming fear in business and taking risks, it's, you can only take a risk if you can afford to take it. And that's like,
but fear is massive, isn't it? Fear stops so much good stuff from happening.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not saying you have to be some bloody loudmouth, you know, very successful sort of timid type of business owners out there.
Yeah, some of the best.
But yeah, but in terms of like sticking your head above the parapet, you know, what does Paul Mort say to us? You know, criticism is the price of success. That as you become more visible, guess what? You'll have to deal with lots more shit. You'll have to deal with idiots who come out of the woodwork because they just didn't know you before because you weren't marketing yourself properly. And some business owners, some of our clients struggle with that. They're like, oh, I'm getting quite a few spammy messages or like idiots comment on my Instagram now. That's because you're fucking known by about 100 yeah. times more people than you were before you started working with us. And that just comes with the territory. And some of our clients, it's water off a duck's back. Other clients we have to help. In the academy, obviously, that's part of what we teach, is about, first of all, letting people know this will probably happen. Because for some people, it's a real shock when they get their first negative comment or their first real twat comes out of the woodwork.
If people were paying more to be in the academy, every time someone gets their first negative, I'd send them a bottle of champagne. Like, celebrate it.
Yeah, yeah. Someone doesn't call you a cunt by midday, you're not marketing yourself.
Yeah, like, flip it. Yeah, flip the narrative on, like, oh, I'm getting really criticised for this campaign. Well, that means it's hitting a nerve. That means there's an equal or, if not more, people out there that this is helping.
But it's scary because, I mean, you know, back in the day, I used to have weekends ruined because I got a shirty email on a Friday afternoon.
Mm. We both did,
and,
didn't we?
Yeah, and it's like, okay, hell. And then now it doesn't bother me at all. Generally speaking, I don't check my emails on a Friday afternoon anyway. But so, you know, and all joking aside, that is, you know, oh, I
wonder why you weren't replying.
I'm getting like fucking like the shitty emails. Don't have emails on your fucking phone then. I mean, I haven't had
this goes back to the whole like act like a fucking grown up. You know, like I was saying, I'm worrying about the lease company not showing up to pick up the car, and then it spirals. Act like a fucking grown up. Like, this is my self-talk at the moment. It's like someone said something shit on my social media. Well, I can have an absolute meltdown and throw my toys out the sandpit. Or act like a grown up. So what?
Mm.
And that sounds so blunt, and I mean it I do mean it with empathy, but if you're letting a shit comment on social media sink your business, or a shit email on a Friday afternoon ruin your weekend with your kids, that's on you.
Yeah, you are putting a stranger ahead of your loved ones.
Like my wife worries about me at the moment, because I would say, like, you know, we're by no means billionaires, but we've tasted success. And through that, we've encountered criticism. I've definitely lost friends people I considered friends who now don't like what they perceive I've become, or whether it shines a light on their on them, or whatever it might be. You know, it's just their story, not mine. And she sometimes worries I'm not more concerned about it.
No, really.
And not in like a fucking hell. You're like quite willing to burn all your previous relationships. More in like a, oh, you used to be really good friends with them. How come you're not chatting anymore? It's like, well, I noticed I was always the person to send a message first, and when I stopped messaging, never heard from them.
I thought with Emma's friends, Emma's always bending over backwards to help her, which is great, but to make contact. So it's like, oh, she's a really good friend. Well, is she? Why don't she ever contact you? Oh, she's really busy. What, and you aren't? And so Emma thought, well, okay, I'll stop contacting. And this person just didn't get in touch.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, fucking even when some bad stuff happened that people knew about, I think she might have reached out at that point. But it's like, you know, was it one of Ant Middleton's books when he met up with some old army colleague? And by that point, Ant was quite famous and doing well. And this old army colleague was like, fucking hell, Ant, you've changed. And he was like, I should fucking hope so. It's been 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, mine is an extreme example, but fuck it. My dad got sent to prison during COVID. And like locally, it was fairly big news. People know my dad, and I could count on one hand how many people checked in to see if I see if I was all right. And that fucking told me a lot. Now, I'm not saying that like I'm sad about it. I'm saying it like in terms of growth mindset, in terms of putting my blinkers on and knowing who's in my corner. I'm clear as day now.
I read a quote the other day. It said, "So if you're not embarrassed about the person you were a year ago, you're not learning enough." Something like that, and I thought, fucking hell. Because, you know, sometimes you'll see one of your earlier videos, you think, oh, fuck, what was I doing? If only I knew then what I know now. But then it's growth, isn't it? We're never going to be perfect. We work hard to be better and learn.
That is a great way of looking at it. If you're not embarrassed by what you were a year ago, you're not growing enough. It.
Matt Elwell or Rudyard Kipling.
fucking hell, he's got one on him today.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, shit, that's right. Because most of us are like, oh, God, look, I'm such a cock or this or that. So, well, yeah, so you're learning, you're self-developing, you're, fucking hell, can't say it, being a better version of yourself. But you know what I mean? You're never going to be the complete article. Things in business will never be perfect.
Yeah.
You'll have wins. You'll have lessons. Some of the people you employ won't work out, but guess what? You took the decision to employ. You interviewed them. That's down to you. You know, people say to us, every problem within a business is a leadership problem.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, that is your responsibility. So rather than blaming staff, well, is it like watching The Karate Kid with Holly the other day? And, you know, Mr. Miyagi saying, when he first meets Daniel, saying, yeah, bad student. No such thing as a bad teacher. Teacher says, student does. And it's like, yeah, see, Mr. Miyagi, fucking wise man.
We like him. So, and I don't know how to say this without saying it, but abundance mindset. The other thing I wanted to touch on.
Up there, we're manifesting.
Is
down there.
If you believe that the world's got nothing for you, you're probably right. And if you believe the world's got lots for you, you're probably right too. And it's like a recession or a difficult economic time is a great way to look at it. That the money is still in the economy, it's just moving slower. And yes, there'll be people listening going, yeah, and they just fucking print more money, so actually there's more money. Well, yeah, okay, fine. The value is still in the market, it just moves slower. And what you've got to remember is that if you're good at what you do, there are customers out there for you. People's washing machines will still break. People will still need their house re-roofing. People still need cars. People still need clothes. They still need to eat. They still need an accountant. They still need a solicitor. It just might be that the people who were a bit more kind of whimsical about their transactions and just like had money to spend haven't now. And so you've got to go and find the people who've actually got the problem, not the people who just were like mad consumers. And so what you'll find in that environment is a lot of your competitors fall off, that they're not picking up that peripheral work anymore. And you do have to be really careful not to fall into a scarcity mindset. Oh, the world's shit, the economy's shit, COVID's shit, Ukraine's shit, Israel's shit, recession's shit, the housing market's shit, the used car, like you could reel off loads and end up going, so we might as well just hunker down and see if we can waddle through. And
yeah, one of our academy members said to me the other day, that moaning that they got a bane in their life, a competitor, as most of us have. Oh, they've bought a fucking Lamborghini. And I was like, well, you could look at it two ways. You could be like, fucking hell, they've got a Lamborghini. Mm. It's so unfair. Or you could be like, fucking hell, if they've got a Lamborghini, fuck knows what car I'll be able to drive one day because they're shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are two ways to look at it. You either look at it
and you could compound that positive one as well. It's like, if there's enough work out there that they could afford a Lamborghini and they're shit, there must be loads of work out there for us who are good. And then it's like, well, I might have fucking 10 Lamborghinis and blah, blah, blah. And that whole like compound the positives, not the negatives, because if you look at any given day, generally 8/10 of the day, 80% of the day will have gone well, but you won't have noticed. Mm-hmm. 10% will be neither here nor there, having your lunch, going for a walk, reading the paper. And then 5% will be like the odd challenge, the kettle's not working, there's a drippy tap. And then maybe 5% will be something that's niggled you, the pebble in your shoe. Mm. And I guarantee you the thing you're focused on is that last bit.
Yeah.
So why not flip that? Why not, you know, an easy way to do it is at the end of every day, write down the 10 best things that have happened. Or
yeah, your wins, gratitude, yeah, absolutely. And that's about as, I suppose, woo-woo as we'll get. But yeah, writing that good shit down. If you've got a book, a journal, whatever, in your notes app that you, the shit's hit the fan.
Yeah, Apple phone has journal on it now.
Look at it and think, shit, look at all these wins this year. That's a lot. And if you hadn't written those down, they're probably, a lot of them, you wouldn't even recall. Because like you say, you focus on the 10% that was bad rather than 90% that was good.
Yeah.
So write down those wins. Write down what you're grateful for. Write down, remind yourself every day why you're doing what you do.
Yeah.
To keep, you know, like some people call it the North Star. This is why I'm in business. This is who I'm doing it for. You know, your wife, your husband, your kids, your mum. You know, I want to retire my parents. Whatever that why is, fucking hold on to it, because business can be a bit of a roller coaster. You know, marketing, when done correctly, will smooth out those dips. You know, again, it's about protection as well as promotion. But your marketing ain't worth shit if you haven't got the right thinking to drive it all. Here endeth the lesson.
Love that.
I'm done now.
Yeah, no, I like that. I was trying to think, how can I wrap up of this? Because this is a good speech. But I just sort of like, so people who come to Codebreaks Marketing Academy, the focus is market message media, who you should be selling to, how to speak to them, where to find them. But on the periphery of that, we will be talking about mindset. We will be sort of dropping in little bits in terms of like, you know, the support will be there in terms of it, our team, that if you're like, I know I need to spend £100 a day on this campaign, but my brain won't let me. There'll be someone here who can talk you through that.
Absolutely. It's, and that, and that's why, you know, we won't let people into the academy if they haven't got that, that, that open mind, that they're here to learn, and they are interested in self-development, the will to implement the marketing that we'll be teaching them, the ability to better handle fear, to learn some of the tricks, secrets, whatever you want to call them, about being more productive, about how to get more energized, about knowing what to focus on, about knowing who to say yes to, who to say no to. And when you're clear on why you're doing what you do, everything else slots into place, which includes your marketing. But yeah, it all starts with you.
How do we get into this so-called academy?
You're allowed to tell me because I can't remember the URL. It's got a couple of full stops in it.
Academy.co. No. No. There we go. Academy.codebreak.co.uk/join. Or just visit codebreak.co.uk and you'll find your way there anyway. But yeah, we'd love to see you in there. I promise you it's not me and Andy sat naked in a forest chanting. It might get to that.
Although he does have a beard.
I do have a beard, yeah, and I do chant. but yeah, no, I enjoyed that episode, I think.
Cool. See you next time.